Good afternoon. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Brent Wolf, in for Celeste Quinn. Audrey Springer is our technical director this afternoon. Krannert Center for the Performing Arts is known for its theater, dance, opera, and musical performances. And to celebrate its 25th anniversary, it will bring them all together in Silver Jubilee performances that begin tomorrow evening and run through the weekend. This afternoon, we have the privilege of speaking with two guest artists and professors emeriti who have returned for the event. To list all the accomplishments and distinctions of our guests would take more time than we have available, so I'll try to hit some of the highlights. William Warfield was a professor of music at the University of Illinois from 1975 to 1990. He's remembered for his role of Joe the Dockhand in the 1951 film version of Showboat and the title role in the 1952 revival of the musical Porgy and Bess. In 1984, he won a Grammy Award for his narration of Copland's A Lincoln Portrait. He will deliver the prologue and serve as Master of Ceremonies for the Silver Jubilee. Welcome back, and thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. I was happy to be here.
Shozo Sato was an artist in residence at Krannert Center from its opening in 1969 until 1992. He's gained an international reputation for his kabuki adaptation of Western stories. In 1991, his production of Achilles, a kabuki play, was the first American kabuki production performed in Japan. He's received numerous awards, including a 1992 Certificate of Commendation from the Japanese Minister of Foreign Affairs for his promotion of Japanese culture throughout the world. He is directing scenes from Kabuki Macbeth and Madame a Butterfly for the Silver Jubilee performance. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Konnichiwa.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join us this afternoon. If you have a question or a comment for William Warfield or Shozo Sato, please give us a call. The number to call locally is 333-9455, or you can call us toll-free at 800-222-9455. Again, the local number is 333-9455, or you can call us toll-free at 800-222-9455. Well, both of you have traveled and performed all over the world, and it seems that all roads lead back to Krannert.
So, well, I like to think so. As a matter of fact, the last 18, 20 years of my life really have been spent here in, from 75 till now, and I'm still here. Mm-hmm. I just go out and come back, but I'm still here.
Well, what does it mean to both of you to be back at Krannert Center? What brings you back for this special performance?
Well, when I first came here, it was the first time that I had taken on a complete job as professor. I had been doing master classes and things prior to that on tour, but then I accepted this position, which meant that I was a full professor and was right here, and that started a tremendous a kind of awareness of youngsters and the kind of things they needed and what to do and to try to impart to them from me, my profession, how to pass that on. I said in my book it was like sort of the laying on of hands. I felt a responsibility. And it's been a most gratifying experience being here because I've had chance to watch youngsters grow. Some of our youngsters who were here are now out in the world doing things, people like Jerry Hadley and Erie Mills, who are making great strides in opera. And so to look back on it all, it's just been a delightful time for me.
Great. Well, Shozo Sato, what does it mean for you to be back?
Well, in my case, I was Faculty of Art and Design since 1964. And 1969... the Krannert Center opens, but during process of tearing down old houses and storefronts on Goodwins and such, and then great big holes created on ground, humongous place, and then gradually the building was erected, and then watching that every day, and then for the opening as an artist in residence of the first generation, I was given opportunity to perform the gala performance, and that is one of a lifetime experience. And since then, my home has been, my theatrical home has been Krannert Center for the Performing Art. And to be able to come back for 25th anniversary is, again, as another once-in-lifetime experience.
Well, indeed, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it's going to be quite a production that's being put on. Maybe if you could each tell us a little bit about the production from your point of view and what part you will have in it.
Well, I start the whole thing off, and as a matter of fact, it's a very dramatic, the house is dark, and they hear my voice, and listen. And I tell them that the ghosts of all the people in the past. Well, then, and I welcome people and give them a little bit of the statistics about what the hall is, and then what better way to celebrate a 25th anniversary than to have the people who are now working as students, as designers, just put on a show. And so as a result of that, I said, let the show begin, and then it unfolds. And Shozo can tell you more specifically about the kabuki things in which are on the show. We have opera on it. We have dance, theater, and then kabuki theater, kabuki opera. And let you tell something about that.
Well, I like to share this information with the people, the listeners, because this is, again, one-of-a-kind program, unique. There's never been done this type of program in Crown Center, which is the best of 25 years of a program has been selected, in a sense. And then sort of a taste of the best scene of this production over the past, like. And as Dr. Wolf has said, as from opera to the dance to the Shakespeare to the musical to all this, without any scenes, just flow one after another. Just the stage set, for example, for part one, the bear, and then gradually bringing one after another, and to make it to the climax of the end of Act One with most rich, visually stunning scene for the opera.
Don Giovanni.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's really a wonderful way of building up. And then part two is a totally different. This the whole thing is a red stage, bare and yet red. And then the colors of costumes and everything related to that deep red. And again, dance and kabuki and opera, all this is without seams, just one after another flow to it. And I think audience will enjoy sort of a maximum sort of feast of the theatrical experience and musical experience in just only one evening.
That's right.
Well, that and the challenge must be to make it all flow together, to be seamless, to flow from one performance to another. How has that been accomplished? There are, of course, been different directors for each scene, and there is one director who's trying to tie it all together. But can you tell me a little bit about the efforts to make it all run together?
Well, I don't know how they did it. It's literally over 200 people involved. And just over 90 performers, and for the years of preparations and behind the scenes before get to the stage, and then costume to the stage sets, and I think it's one of the masterpiece of 25 years of Crown Center's history. It's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Well, which
I think what it was, you take people like Randy Hand, who they sat and they got a conception of what it was to be and how it was to flow. And then, of course, once they got that on paper as a conception, then to how to go about Colleen, our little stage manager there, who is unbelievably good. She knows how to get people where they're supposed to be for what, and it's just all been so well designed, the scenes, the costumes, everything, that it's just flowing like wine now. It's just, I have the highest respect for the planning of it, and now the execution of it is just going without hitch at all.
Yeah. Yes, Scott Bladdery,
yes,
the stage designer, mm-hmm, as his concept of a stage design is,
yes,
simply masterpiece.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you both have mentioned the technical crews and the stage managers and so on. Well, the performance will also be giving them a chance to have a spot in the sun, so to speak, that the curtains will not close and the lights will be left up, as I understand it, so that people can see all the work that the stagehands,
uh-huh,
are,
yeah,
doing.
Yeah. And part of that is it. That's a part of the genius of how this was put together, because it does let you see somewhat behind the scenes as well, and that seeing behind the scenes is not deterring you from what is going on stage too. It's really masterfully put together,
yes.
I think.
Since I have opportunity to visit other performing arts centers, other universities for the different type of productions, and not only this country but overseas, and I still think Crown Center's facilities and then professional staff is world class, and the lighting to the sound, audio to stage set, all the kind of costume departments and their designs, and of course the theater department to the opera departments and dance department all really work tight together. And educating as well as producing such a masterpiece for an opera is one of the great plays too.
Well, of course, it ends with the famous suicide scene of Madama Butterfly, and I tell you, I have seen Butterfly so many times, and so many, but when that I don't want to give away, but how that is done at the end is just breathtaking. Shozo did that.
Well, that'll certainly be a treat. We're talking this afternoon about the Silver Jubilee performance at Krannert Center to celebrate its 25th anniversary. The performances start tomorrow night and will be running through the weekend. If you have a question or comment for our guests, please give us a call. We're speaking with William Warfield and Shozo Sato. The number to call locally is 333-9455, or you can call us toll-free at 800-222-9455. Again, the local number is 333-9455, and the toll-free number is 800-222-9455. Well, part of the performance, as I understand it, is also unique to Krannert Center in the fact that Krannert Center is not only a performing arts facility, but also home to the various departments. And it may have been difficult to try to coordinate all these various departments if they weren't in one building. How much of the production is due to the actual setup of Krannert Center?
Well, because of Krannert Center, this type of activities is possible. Because within the Crown Center buildings, symphony to the choral department, to the every aspect of performing art, even Kabuki theater is a unique thing. It's the only place in the United States is a part of a Crown Center.
Yes.
From the very beginning. And again, this is the wonderful kind of place in the world.
The way it was constructed is it makes it possible for all of those theaters to operate. You know, we have the big hall, Follinger Auditorium. We have the theater, festival theater, where the opera is. The Coral Theater, I think, is where the plays are, and there's a little theater in the round there. Each of them have underneath a network of dressing rooms and costume rooms, set places where sets can be built. So you're right. If it had been all these different departments in different buildings, it would have been practically impossible to task. But it's just down in the basement for this one and up with that one, and from the basement or down on the underneath and up with that one, right to the stage, to common stage, which is right there. And that's what makes it possible for this to be done that way.
All right. Well, if people are interested in attending the performance and becoming a member of the audience, I'll give this information out now, and we'll also give it out a little later on in the program. You can call the Krannert Center ticket office at 333-6280. Again, the Krannert Center ticket office is at 333-6280. Performances are Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m., and there's a performance on Sunday at 3 p.m. I also want to talk with both of you a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing over the years and are continuing to do. Shozo Sato, you once have said that Americans know as little about kabuki as they once knew about Japanese cooking. And I think you said that a while ago, and I'm wondering how that's changed over the 30 years that you've been introducing Americans to kabuki theater.
Well, in the professional world, kabuki has been recognized and then studied and adapt it in many different way, but for the general public, still unique area of the theater arts. now different type of Japanese cuisine, even though if you go on to the sort of smaller cities in the United States, they end up having sort of a Japanese restaurant. And people are using chopsticks and trying to eat the teppanyaki, they call the beef, and such as cooked in right in front of you on and such. And that's remarkable. And yet, when really come down to understanding of Japanese culture, it's very much still on the surface. And I still believe through arts of different type, which is have a dialect, pure voice of its culture, and through this art, the people are to understand and then study and appreciate another culture is the best way for general public. And for this purpose, I like to pursue Kabuki theatrical activity for years to come, so that American audience or in European country too, they can take one more step closer to the spirit of Japanese, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that many people in our area are familiar because of all your work here at Krannert Center, but do you still get asked the question, what is Kabuki theater?
Not anymore in this, our home campus here. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm. And how have you formulated an answer to that question through the various places that you've been throughout the world when someone asks you, what is Kabuki theater?
Usually I use this type of answer, that is, ka is music or song, bu is dance, ki is acting or acting skill. And so then, not like Broadway musical, but more likely much more grander form of art, that is Western theater, which is like Shakespearean plays, and then opera and the ballet. Those are three major European or Western performing art put together, and then come to equal to the Kabuki theater, because Kabuki have over 300 repertories, and then they are constantly revived year after year, and have enjoyed nearly 400 years of their own histories. Like my teacher is 17th generations of that profession. So each family trying to keep the art form in the purest form. And this kind of the explanation is totally unique to American audience, because now we can see famous actors, movie stars, have their next generation becoming movie stars again. You know, so mm-hmm. that is catching up in a sense. But in Japan, you know, some of the family of the imperial court musicians, for example, 120 generations, the professional, best of that line of works, just performing musical instruments of not a piano, but a harp, Japanese harp or bamboo flute or drum and such. They're practicing and perfecting for 120 generations. And then American audience say, wow, that's a different kind of weight in what you think of discipline or study. Mm-hmm.
Right. Almost a whole way of life rather
yes,
than
exactly,
an avocation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, William Warfield, you have been involved in all sorts of musical performances, from gospel to spirituals, musicals, classical concert performances, and even narration and so on. I'm wondering if you have a favorite sort of performance to be involved in.
Not really, and I say that advisedly, because quite often, I mean, when I just sort of strip everything and get down to basically what I like to do, it probably would form more the recital concert program. That was my basic love first, to get out with a pianist and just go through a great deal of emotional changes in different literatures and impart my feelings through music to the the audience, and it's a very becomes a very personal thing. Recitalist and his audience and his pianist and his collaboration with his pianist and things like that. But I enjoy the greater medium of the of acting, of opera, symphony orchestra appearances. Certainly, I mean, the experience that I had when I made the movie Showboat was just fascinating to me. I'd never been out in Hollywood on a set before, and then suddenly to be out on a set with people like Catherine Grayson and Howard Keel, Agnes Moorehead, Joey Brown, Ava Gardner, and I was just all aglow with wondering. And then when we started to work on the pre-recording, and then the shooting and the syncing, and I stood there and wondered, how in the world could anything come out on the screen as an art form with all of this technicality going on? And how the film was put together and the cut after it was in the cutting room and the scenes and all of that, and even a juxtaposition of parts. You would start sometimes with the ending scene, and the beginning scene comes later on in shooting, and how that all tied together fascinated me. And because of it, I mean, I just was enthralled with doing movie as a medium. And then, of course, then I loved when I came along, opera for blacks was not open. And it opened in the 50s and pretty well the Met and that whole era there when Leontine and all of the wonderful great people blacks came into opera. So I was not into opera as such until sort of after that. But what I did do, and Porgy and Bess is an example of opera, was just tremendously grateful for me to do. I enjoyed it very much. And then, of course, appearing with symphony orchestras, and then I had a chance to do the Hallmark of Fame, Green Pastures, which was just an acting role. I did not sing at all, which was fine. I had started out as an actor in the community players in Rochester, doing things on radio and stuff like that as an actor. So that was all a part of it. And so I think my answer is for what's his name from, was it Brigadoon? When I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. That probably describes my attitude. To what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then teaching came in and crowned it all off. I'd always wanted to teach. I started out to get a degree to teach, and then I got into performing, and then I came full around by 1975 and accepted a position to teach. And I must say to you here now that the gratification in my life now, even more so than all of the wonderful personal accolades that I got as an actor, and the applause and the bravos and all of that, that's wonderful. Believe me, it's wonderful. But when I sit now and see a youngster that I've tried to pass this thing on to and sit in an audience and see it coming back to me, then I feel I've done something, and there's no feeling greater than that, is there, Osho?
Oh, that's the best extreme reward as best a human reward. Being.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that these students have as many opportunities as you did? Do you feel hopeful that they'll be able to have as rich and
oh, life? I'm sure of that. No, but also, you see, when opportunity comes, there's always myriads of talent that are ready to fill that opportunity. The more opportunities created, seems like the more talent. Now, Shoso can tell you, when I first started teaching, and to this day, I am continually amazed at the abundance, really great talent of these youngsters that are all over the country out there. And no matter how many opera houses we have, we don't have enough to fill them, to take up all of that talent. So it does come to them being on a competitive scale. The greatest of them will come to the top, and there are lots of them out there. For anyone that you see standing that can do a Madame Butterfly that you see on stage, believe me, there are 10 in the wings can do almost as well. That's how great our talent is in this country. You'd agree, wouldn't you, I'm sure.
Well, I agree 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It must be great and also frustrating at the same time.
Yes, yes, it is, because you don't know how to... if youngsters ask you, do you think I should stay in this profession? I had a friend of mine who said that if a youngster come to him and said, do you think I should stay in this profession or change? But he said he's tempted to tell him, no, don't stay into it. He says, because if they pay any attention to him at all, they're not going to make it anyhow. The ones you tell that aren't going to pay one bit of attention to you, and that's the ones that are going to get up to the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking this afternoon with William Warfield and Shozo Sato. They are both professors emeriti and guest artists at Krannert Center. They've come back for the Silver Jubilee performance, which will be taking place starting tomorrow night and running through the weekend at Krannert Center. If you have questions for them, I encourage you to join the conversation and give us a call. You can call us locally at 333-9455, or you can call us toll-free at 800-222-9455. Again, the local number is 333-9455, or you can call us toll-free at 800-222-9455. Well, Shozo Sato, I also want to ask you about the Japanese tea ceremony. At 22 years old, you became the youngest in Japanese history to become a master of the tea ceremony, and that was something that you also brought to Central Illinois with you and performed many times for people. Are you still involved in that?
Very much so, yes.
Mm-hmm.
After I done the early retirement from university, I moved to California, Northern California, where the nature, the trees and the oceans is very similar to Japan. And then now I have created a tea ceremony room. However, my commissions in the theater activities is so busy that I haven't had time to stay at home to practice. However, everywhere I do go, I carry my tea ceremony equipment and constantly demonstrating. And this is a different kind of a situation, demonstration. And another one is for your spiritual sake. And I haven't had a time to practice tea ceremony for myself yet. And I hope that I'll have that opportunity soon after I go back to California in mm-hmm. this late spring. But tea ceremony is, in a sense, a total art. The life, our daily life, and the life for tomorrow's to come, that's to be overlapped with artistic discipline, the art of all kind. The almost every form of art are overlapped in minimal and yet maximum effect, and to celebrate every moment of life in most richest and most intellectually and artistically rewarding way of living is the tea ceremony. And for this reason, I'm trying to inform about the value of the tea ceremony to the Western world much as possible. And this is another way to understand Japanese mentalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, you both, I'm sure, get requests all the time to come and perform and do different things all over the world. How do you decide now which ones to accept? It must be awfully challenging.
Well, yes, it is. But let's go back to one thing. Do you realize I came here in 1975 and met Shozo shortly after it. And then I'm telling you, the first experience I ever had with a tea ceremony was through Shozo, and I was just completely exhilarated by it. It was a wonderful experience. Did you know that was my first time?
No, I didn't know
it
that.
It was the first time I'd ever had a tea ceremony in all my career, and even going through Japan. I never had had a tea ceremony until I came here and had it at Shozo's. Now, getting back to how you choose, I still don't have sense enough to say no. And I get so involved. I was I'm now at the University of Texas in San Antonio, and I look around and I see something on my schedule. Somebody asks me, will you do this, will you do that? And I say, oh, yeah, that's in the mail. Okay, I'll sure. Then later on, I look around and I say, oh, good heavens, how could I have said yes? I'm supposed to be here. That, and just this past week is an example of it. Things just sort of jump in on you. when I accepted to become a teacher, then I accepted the responsibility of seeing students through junior and senior recitals and the Nats competition, the Metropolitan auditions, and all of that thing. And that in itself is a full job, even though I went as visiting professor. And then all of a sudden I realized, my goodness, here is coming a Nats competition Saturday. I had to get out of there to get up to North Carolina to do a master class situation and get over here to do this thing for the week. Meanwhile, calling back and making sure my students are at the seminars that they're supposed to be. Get right back there with a recital coming up of the student the next day with dress rehearsals. So that's been the story of my life. And I said, oh, good heavens, how could I have said yes to so many things? But it's fascinating. I enjoy it. And people say to me a lot of times, well, if you are doing all of that traveling, what time do you have to rest? I do build in rest. I say, okay, this period I've got to be able to sleep 7 hours. But the actual change of pace from one thing to the other is really restful in a certain sense, because it's not like I'm batting my brains all the time teaching. Then, boom, I'm performing. And that's another thing, and that's a relief from the teaching. So within the different things I do, I find a variation of things that keeps me fresh and not jaded.
Mm-hmm. That is a really wonderful explanation. Often people ask me, Shoto, why you do the flower arrangement and tea ceremony and painting and dance and theater and directing theater and operas? But to me, they're all same in a sense, and yet each one of these is take up all my energy and bring up to the highest. When I finished, I don't need rest.
Yeah.
Because when I can go shift that energy to the next level,
yeah.
In another art form,
yeah.
Then I can transform that excitement into my painting. The paintings become very excited, very powerful. And then after I finish that, I go back to tea ceremony room and then sit and contemplate and do the tea ceremony. That's another form of performance. And that calmness, the internalizing this energy in the tea ceremony, that I can bring to the theater again.
Yes.
And, you know,
it's a really
wonderful life that as an artist. You know, I think that we are the most celebrated human being artists.
Well, and I'm wondering if you both also have particular teachers that you model your own teaching styles after, and that you hope that you are inspiring your students as much as perhaps they inspired you.
Well, I think that there's no doubt about that, and of course Shozo is the man with that whole tradition of 120 generations behind. We don't go back that far, but the very art form itself of singing cannot be taught. Even the technique of it cannot be taught by writing. Say you do this, you do that, and you do this, and you do that. It's sort of like apprenticeship. I don't think there's any way I could have read a book that would have told me how to shape a phrase than from a teacher showing me. See what I'm saying? So that is all a part of the learning, the apprenticeship, and then coming into the mastership yourself, and then having the apprentice behind you that you're giving it to. That's all a part of the tradition of art, whatever form of art is in. You cannot learn it in a book. You can read about it and understand it, but you can't learn to do it unless somebody's laid their hands on you and passed it on to you. And that's also one of the most fascinating things about it, too.
I 100% agree to our old master here. the great background, and exactly the same way. Yes, it's at the University of Illinois or any other institution. Through classroom, one can inform student through academic media. Mm-hmm. But when come to the art itself to become rich and full bloom, that have to have a human communication. Mm-hmm. as the master and a student, or father and a son, mm-hmm. teacher, student, any of this human relationship to nurture this student from inside to bring them up to the certain level so they understand what I'm trying to explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and this technique alone is impossible in artistic development.
Yeah.
And so as I observed Dr. Warfield's, many of the students, with greatest respect, call him Uncle Bill. And he have a great follower. And I often say adopted sons of his.
I enjoy that, too. As a matter of fact, I have students now, gosh, all over the country, that call me Uncle Bill, and a few years ago, one person from here contacted a whole gang of them, and they presented me for my birthday a beautiful Oriental rug, and they had coordinated from the students who were away to sign the postcard, and they called themselves the Greater Warfield Family.
Oh yes,
and that's really gratifying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm interested in what both of you have coming up in the future. What does the future hold in store for you? Where are you moving in your next directions and so on?
Well, at the Corona Center, for first decades, I have contemplated to reproduce traditional Kabuki theater in authentic ways possible. And we finished that decade. And the next decade was then how well we can adapt this concept of Kabuki and aesthetics into another level. So we created so-called Illinois Kabuki or American Kabuki using Western stories with Kabuki conventions overlapped. And five of them are done now. And so I like to move to the next step and using Kabuki convention of more abstracted and then more crystallized form and then adapted to the Western play. And so no longer visually Kabuki as a makeup and costume to make Kabuki Japanese characters, but they are Western characters, and yet theatrical convention has been totally adapted and then creating another form of theater. I think this is a very difficult one, but I've been thinking for some years, and I'm hoping that opportunity will come sometime soon.
Well, I hope it goes well. And before we get to you, William Warfield, and your future plans, we do have a caller who's joined us on line number one. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I was wondering about not so much emphasizing the premieres, but I was wondering if Mr. Warfield had any comment on the premiere of Scott Joplin's, I forgot what he called it, an opera, I guess, ragtime opera.
Tremonitia?
Yeah, and I guess it has been done in New York sometime in the last couple of years, if there's anything you...
Oh, yeah, it's been done, and I think Gunther Schuller and people... In fact, right here at the University of Illinois, before I came here, they had a production of Tremonitia. You remember that probably, Shoto. I think the opera department did a Tremonitia here. Robert Ray and a whole group of those people from the Black Chorus back
before... Oh, I didn't know that was before you were here.
That I came in 75, and this was around 73 or 72, I believe. They did a Tremonitia right here, and it had been done nationally before then. Of course, it's a great work. And then I saw it in New York before I came here years ago, the production they had of it there. And what was the name of the gal that did it? I can't remember her name, but it was very good. I remember Betty Allen, who now is the director of the Harlem School of the Arts, was in it, too. And so it's had productions. I don't know when the last one has been, but I was very pleased and surprised when I first got here. They said, oh, yeah, we did Tremonitia last year.
Yeah, I thought that actually was one of the first times it had been staged. I'm not sure.
No, it had been done before. Well, it was, yes, because it was that period of time in which they had started doing something nationally about it. Yeah. on the national scale. To Gunther Schuller, I think, was the one that his big production of it was the first national thing. And then I think Atlanta, they did it in Atlanta, Georgia, too. And I'm not sure, people connected with Morehouse, Dr. Wendell Whalum, who was telling me some of their experiences on putting it on at Morehouse down there, or in that area of the black colleges. There's several, you know, Clark and Atlanta University and all of those together, and a lot of times their activities were sort of combined, but it was done down there also.
Okay, well, it had an interesting story behind it, and it was well done here, so I thought you might have been around when it was.
I came just after that.
All right, well, Thank you.
Bye. All right, well, thank you very much for your call. Well, now, William Warfield, we did want to get back to find out what the future holds in store for you and what directions you're planning to move in.
Well, I'm going to basically be headquartered in Chicago, and you just happen to be at a time that I'm in the process of sort of closing out for a condo in Chicago where I found something that I like. And I'm connected with the Lyric Opera School, board of directors and that, and I'm very active in all of the activities they do. I'm also a trustee of the North Shore Music Association, school, which is in Winnetka. And out of there, I do various, I'm doing a lot of narration things. It seems like as having won the Grammy for the Lincoln portrait, now people sort of, well, get Warfield, he's great at narrations. And I've done everything from Oedipus Rex to Peter and the Wolf to about four different versions of things having to do with Martin Luther King. I mean, I have several versions of I Have a Dream, and then the Schwantner, which New Morning for the World, which has series of his sermons. And so I will probably this next semester be doing a series of master classes in and out of the Chicago area and performing. And I guess that'll be the story of my life until
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're just about out of time, and I want to give out the information again about how you can go see the Silver Jubilee of Krannert Center in honor of its 25 years of performing arts. You can call the Krannert Center ticket office at 333-6280. Again, that is 333-6280. The performances are tomorrow night through Saturday night at 8 p.m. and again on Sunday at 3 p.m. Well, William Warfield and Shozo Sato, I want to thank you both very much for joining us this afternoon and wish you the best in the future and a good performance while you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for coming in.